are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, investigative journalist Marcy Wheeler from EmptyWheel.net on just what the hell is going on. Meanwhile, primary results are in. A new Georgia map in the making, and teachers flex their muscle in Kentucky. Meanwhile, the Senate and House passes that Dodd-Frank rollback. Got the list of Democratic senators who just coincidentally are getting a huge payoff by big banks. Meanwhile, Don Blankenship's great adventure will continue. And the EPA bars the press from a summit on contaminants. 40% of American adults can't cover a $400 emergency expense. And Michael Cohen's business partner agrees to cooperate as part of a plea deal. Nah, I'm sure.
This is the time where I say, Mike Cohen, very distant from everything.
Senate and House now have passed legislation that gives pharmaceutical companies a right to bypass FDA safety tests for terminally ill people. And rest in peace, Philip Roth. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Wednesday, hump day, as we call it. Just a reminder, just a hump day reminder, this show relies on its members for just about everything, frankly. And so if you want to help this show keep chugging along, you can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com as our way of saying thank you. We give you extra content every day. And of course, if you are someone who can't afford, for whatever reason, the membership, and you want access to the fun half of the show, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Have a little patience, but we will get there for you. All right, let's start off on a fun note here, shall we? This is, and do we have any type of music for that? We don't feel like one of these... one of those segments, we should have like a standby music. Sort of just like some horns, I feel like. Some type of trumpets. I mean, I don't want to do the fanfare, but let's do it anyways. Yeah, folks, this is Matt's pick of the month, right? Matt's pick of the month. Every month, starting with today, we have a Matt gets a pick of a video clip that he just, for whatever reason, for something maybe deep in his past, we don't know, he thinks is must-see/hear radio and video. And, of course, today, Matt's pick. Matt, why don't you describe today's Matt's pick?
Well, Trump's at a pro-life gala, and I think it shows a certain confidence. This clip kind of shows Trump's public speaking confidence. If I was... showing this to maybe freshman students of public speaking, I would say, if you make a mistake, don't take time to dwell on it, even self-deprecatingly, just move on through it.
And you, in fact, did teach, is that right?
That is true experience.
There you go. Okay, well, here it is, folks. Matt's pick of the week.
Every time Catherine's older siblings come home from school, Catherine runs into their arms and gives them a great, big, beautiful hug.
So, if I understand this correctly, the kid goes to Skloog. Is that right?
Yep.
Do we have a translation? We can play that one more time for people so they really...
I got the highest marks at the best Skloogs.
Every time Catherine's older siblings come home from school, Catherine runs into their arms and gives them a great, big, beautiful hug.
Beautiful hug.
It rhymes with schlug.
You got to laugh, folks, to keep you from crying.
University of Pennsylvania, best schlug. Went there, did great.
There you go. Betsy DeVos, she still believes in public schlugs.
I would like to opine on the schlug situation.
Washington Post reports that the House yesterday passed the so-called right to try legislation. This is a version, in fact, the same version that passed the Senate in August. The House was trying to fashion another version of this bill that wouldn't be so incredibly irresponsible, if you could believe it, and destructive of, I mean, it gives you a sense of just how much money the pharmaceutical industry pours into the Senate, even relative to the House. Now, ostensibly, it sounds like maybe it's a good idea, right? I mean, legislation that would allow people with life-threatening illnesses to bypass the Food and Drug Administration to obtain experimental medications. However, and this is a bill that was championed by Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. When you start to sort of like hear what's going on here, it becomes even that much more problematic. Right now, there are two options for patients who are seeking experimental medications. One is enroll in clinical trials, assuming they're eligible, or participating in the FDA's expanded access program. The agency has said that it approves almost all such requests to that program. So there already exists a mechanism, right? However, with this new bill, drug manufacturers wouldn't have to go through the FDA at all. They would have to report so-called adverse events. In other words, things that went really wrong, including premature deaths only once a year. And the bar in which what constitutes adverse events, not just in terms of like people's premature deaths, but the bar in terms of causality is weakened. So the agency would also be restricted in how it could use that information when it's considering the experimental treatments for approval. So in other words, we reported that we had some premature deaths, but you can't necessarily look at that when we're looking for approval. So this is really basically a way to undercut the FDA. Frank Pallone, the ranking Democrat on the House Energy Commerce Committee, basically said this is just going to allow fly-by-night physicians and clinics the opportunity to peddle false hope and ineffective drugs to desperate patients. But it's also the case that every major patient group overwhelmingly opposes this measure. So this is sort of like one of those nice-sounding but obvious attempts to destroy our regulatory structure and for pharmaceutical companies to make another buck. Let's go over just quickly some of the highlights of the primaries last night. We'll hear more and we'll talk more about this in the fun half of the program. The DCCC did not do so great last night. I don't want to overstate how well sort of other groups did. I don't know that Our Revolution necessarily did super well either. But in those instances where you had, where the DCCC intervened, they lost. One of those places was in Kentucky's 6th congressional district. Amy McGrath, I wouldn't say that I was thrilled, but she was the one who was the first, I guess, female fighter pilot who was bragging about, I think, how many people she killed or something to that effect. But she won the Democratic nomination in that 6th congressional district, defeating Lexington Mayor Jim Gray, who was the DCCC candidate. Also in Kentucky, not necessarily a Democratic story, but an interesting one, a high school math teacher, a guy named R. Travis Brenda, defeated the House Majority Floor Leader, a guy named Jonathan Schell, for his state house position. Now, Schell was involved in the attack on teachers' pensions in Kentucky. So this is a good sign that there is this solidarity that teachers feel. I mean, this obviously is a Republican race, but it's important to note that these teachers are very conscious of who is on their side and who is not. That's a good to see. And in Georgia, Stacey Abrams, I guess she's the first African-American female Democratic nominee in Georgia for governor, by far. And what's interesting about that race, she won big against the other Stacey. I can't even remember the other Stacey's name. Stacey Evans. And Stacey Evans, I think, was backed by more of the establishment, if my understanding, although it was rather contentious. But the approach that Stacey Abrams is pushing and has pushed is that she's going for those votes who have been on the sideline. Apparently, there's a huge number of African Americans who have not been participating. 1.5 million eligible people of color who did not cast ballots in the last gubernatorial election. Georgia's always a huge reach, but the last gubernatorial election, there was a spoiler. The Republicans did well, and they still only won by about 7 points. So it's not inconceivable in the proper circumstance that someone like Stacey Abrams could win. But what's really interesting about this is going to be a test case in some respects. Do you go for those Republican voters, or do you go and find Democratic votes that have been sidelined? And in Georgia, it's generally the former. This time, it's going to be a ladder, and there'll be all sorts of different factors that won't make this apples-to-apples comparison, but we shall see. And just also to note, on the Republican side in that race, there was that guy who, Brian Kemp, I think it was, who was the guy who had the shotgun and his daughter's boyfriend. He will be running off against the lieutenant governor in Georgia. So that's going to be helpful for the Democrats, at least for another month or two. They're going to be out there, and, Cagle and Brian Kemp will be facing each other off with shotguns. So that'll be fun to watch. We'll see which one of those fires. Yeah, here is oh, look at that. He's got a fake. Here, let's look at this. He's got a new ad out. This is a conservative Brian Kemp.
I'm Brian Kemp. I'm so conservative, I blow up government spending. I own guns.
Pause it. Pause it. Hold on 1 second.
It's a lot better when he
is the government. Government spending is in that big field in his backyard.
He's conservative with the CGI budget.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, also that's true. Why not just actually throw a piece of dynamite, you wimp? All right.
I blow up government spending. I own guns that no one's taken away. Mm. My chainsaw's ready to rip up some regulations. I got a big truck just in case I need to round up criminal illegals and take them home myself.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Yep, I just said that. I'm Brian Kemp. If you want a politically incorrect conservative, that's me.
Yep, I just said that, Majority Report team. I hope this is clickable.
Are you sure this is not a Vic Berger video?
No kidding. Gotta love the conservative political ideology, which just involves, you know, what can I say that's going to upset libs?
When did liberals start getting offended by chainsaws?
Oh, man, I am so offended by those
because
chainsaws.
Because I just think of the trees and their pain. I just really don't like it.
There's some carbon that's not being filtered.
Yeah, there's carbon that's not being filtered properly, and there's also auto emissions from chainsaw. So that's
got a
really
big chainsaw.
That's actually a feature of the patriarchy.
There's no way that chainsaw started like that. They had the gaffers, you know, working it a couple of times.
Yeah, I think that gun noise was Foley too.
Exactly. Oh, totally. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Marcy Wheeler, who's going to sort out the latest in the. Now, myriad of Trump scandals. We will take a quick break. Be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's always a pleasure to welcome to the program Marcy Wheeler. She is the proprietor of EmptyWheel.net. Marcy, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Marcy, let's start with the most recent and work backwards in terms of. Well, let's put it this way. There seems to be just so many tentacles to this ongoing investigation. At this point, from your perspective, what seems to be, I don't know, the most dramatic, the most important thing that we've learned over the past several weeks?
I don't know if it's drama per se, but both Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort are getting more and more exposed, as is probably Roger Stone, although that's all happening at the grand jury. So we know that all of his closest associates have been dragged into the grand jury, or at least interviews with Mueller. So that seems to be where Mueller is focused on right now. But all these other parts of DOJ and the state of New York are now getting people to flip on Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen. So it's sort of like this increasing drama before some kind of big reveal, but who knows what the reveal will be.
Right. I mean, it does feel like there was a, I guess a quality to this where, you know, a Mueller started digging and there was, I mean, I just have this sense of like where he was just like, my God, we're going to need a bigger truck type of thing, or, you know, we're going to need a bigger boat. And so let's start most recent to back. Yesterday it was reported, and maybe you have no thoughts on this, but you did mention the New York Attorney General's office, and this is the most recent move by on their part. They reached a plea deal with this guy, Evgeny Friedman, who is a Russian immigrant known as the Taxi King, I guess. And he was Michael Cohen's partner, or I don't know what this means, passive client, or Michael Cohen was his passive client, according to him. And so there was a plea deal for his essential, I guess, tax evasion. What is this? Is this relevant in any way?
Yeah, it gets far less attention, but the SDNY, so the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, they're investigating Michael Cohen for at least two things. And what gets all the attention is the hush payment to Stormy Daniels and other women. But in fact, the tax fee medallion fraud was involved in that. So we know that what the Taxi King just pled guilty to in New York State, with the agreement that he would cooperate in both state and federal investigations, is one of the prongs of the investigation that the U.S. attorney in Manhattan is investigating Cohen for, and is, you know, about to start getting all of this information from the raid on his apartment. So, it's incredibly significant, because that's going to, you know, they both sort of deny it, and they're both kind of looking around as if they don't know each other now. But every expectation, the Taxi King dude got a pretty sweet plea deal, because if he pays off the taxes he did not pay to New York State, then he's going to avoid jail time. And so to avoid jail time, he's obviously cooperating quite a bit, and the obvious person to cooperate against is Michael Cohen.
Right. I mean, it would be an amazing coincidence if Michael Cohen's partner got this plea deal to bring down someone else.
Yeah, bingo. Right. I mean, this was a great plea deal. So the general rule on plea deals is if you get a really great plea deal, if you're a big crook who's going to avoid prison time, then chances are good that they've got a bigger or more important crook in their eyesight.
And just remind us, in the context of a plea deal, it's not like we give you a plea deal and then it's like a potluck situation, right? It's you tell us what you got, and then we'll give you some deal, right? I mean, they know what they're trading here, right? In terms of prosecutors,
with almost always. I mean, there was one notable exception when Ari Fleischer got immunity in the Spiro Libby case, but beyond that. Right. I mean, generally, as a prosecutor, you lock in what the person is going to tell you once they flip, and you do it. They get immunity for that. They, you know, you sort of, it's queen for a day, king for a day. You pretend that you're not hearing what the person's saying, decide how much it's worth, carry out negotiations for what you're going to give in return, and the person flips. And so that process has gone on more than three times already in the Mueller office, and now we're seeing it at New York State. And importantly, remember, both Cohen and Manafort, and probably Jared Kushner, they're all being investigated for things that can be charged at both the state or the federal level. And so one of the significant parts of that plea deal yesterday is they said, well, you know, he'll cooperate at state and federal, which means if this gets dumped down to the state, you know, if Trump pardons Michael Cohen tomorrow, Michael Cohen's still on the hook in New York State.
Is what of the laws in New York State that provide for double jeopardy? I mean, my understanding is that before the whole Schneiderman implosion, he was lobbying New York State lawmakers to change these double jeopardy laws so that if there's a pardon, is that no longer in effect? I mean, what are the implications in terms of that relationship between federal and state, particularly in New York?
I'm not a total expert on this, but as I understand that pardon can only happen after jury selection has already started. So that, you know, if the law doesn't change, and this was Schneiderman before he got ousted, and now we're going to hopefully have somebody far less susceptible to blackmail, right? But if a criminal case, so starting next week, the U.S. attorney in Manhattan is going to start getting the materials that they raided from Michael Cohen. But Trump can't prevent them from looking at it by pardoning Cohen, because if that happens, then they're going to dump it right down to New York State. So in other words, it helps Trump if the rules don't change, but it doesn't help him that much, just because what he's trying to prevent is Robert Mueller from learning all this stuff about him, and he could learn a great deal, and Michael Cohen could go broke you know, paying his lawyers between now and then, between such time as you'd start jury selection. Because remember, jury selection starts the day or the couple of days before trial.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned that about Schneiderman. That never really occurred to me that he, I mean, it's obvious now that you say it, that this is a guy who is a walking sort of like, a, you know, blackmail a candidate. I would imagine there's a lot of people relieved who may have heard, you know, bits and pieces of that type of stuff, who are glad that he is out and that that is not an issue.
Right, because remember, Trump raised it in 2013. So Trump, because some of these people went to Michael Cohen to give him the dirt. So Trump has had this, or could have had this, over Schneiderman the whole time. And I find it significant that this plea deal, this taxi plea deal, happens after Schneiderman's gone. By all accounts, the woman who replaced him for this interim period is really great and really experienced. So, you know, we might, on top of Schneiderman needing to go because he's terrible, his treatment of women is terrible, you know, thus far we're not any worse off and probably better off with who we've got at AG.
I don't want to go into sort of like too speculative territory, but do you think that was just luck?
Hard to say. It's hard, you know, it's hard.
Right.
I mean,
just, you know, it came up, and I don't want to go into territory where there's no, you know, sort of there's no reporting, and I don't want to go into conjecture, but it is an interest, you know, like if we were sitting at the bar, we would talk about that a little bit more, I would suppose. But
yeah, I mean, Jane Mayer has made it very clear that the two people who, the people that they reported on in The New Yorker are totally different than the people that Trump knew about. Doesn't mean that Trump didn't know about them as well, but certainly Mayer says their story came independent of that, given all of the other Me Too. So we shouldn't assume that, because she's a great reporter and we should trust her.
Okay. All right. Well, so moving, I guess, from the present backwards, Giuliani, apparently, in a HuffPost interview, basically said that the release, and I know you've written about this in the context of, you know, what the sort of the conspiracy that the Republicans are trying to sort of construct. But Giuliani said that the notion of Trump's that the release of the Russian stolen emails constituted colluding with Russia, he said it's not. But if it is, it isn't illegal. It's sort of like a gift, and you're not involved in the legality of getting it. Use that as an entry point into sort of what is being created with this whole FBI spy thing. And I know that in a couple of pieces you've written, there's an attempt I don't know if attempt is right the word, but there's a habit of Republicans not contemplating the notion that stealing emails is illegal.
Well, let me also connect it to the negotiations about whether Trump will ever sit for an interview, because the last offer that Giuliani made Mueller, at least of course, Giuliani is the only one leaking about this, and he's claiming things to the press which are patently false. But in CNN reporting yesterday, they said that they offered to sit for 2 hours and only talk about election stuff, but not about even transition, much less stuff that happened when Trump was president. And the problem with that, and the reason why Giuliani's claim that emails are cool so long as you didn't have any role in hacking it, is because, and I sort of think of this as a quid pro quo, in the June 9 meeting, you're offered dirt on Hillary, and you're given an ask, which is Magnitsky sanctions, get rid of the Magnitsky sanctions. Within a week, those emails start coming out. Dirt in the form of emails from Hillary Clinton, which the campaign got offered back in April, start coming out. The issue is there's a quid pro quo, and the quo happens on December 29th when Mike Flynn says to Sergei Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, hold off on responding to Obama's sanctions punishing you for tampering in our election. We're going to get to sanctions discussions next month when we get in charge. So in other words, if you cut off and those conversations between Flynn and Kislyak were very closely managed from Mar-a-Lago, where Trump was. So there's a bunch of reasons to believe that, that Flynn, in that conversation with Kislyak, was doing exactly what Trump said. If that conversation is off limits for the meeting between Mueller and Trump, then what Trump has done, what Giuliani has done, is basically only make accessible the quid part, but not the quo part. They made accessible what the Russians, the gift, which Rudy is talking about generally, the gift that the Russians are offering, without making accessible to Mueller what Trump did or offered to do to pay off that help, to pay off that election help. So that's the logic. That's precisely why Rudy wants to limit the interview that way. And it matches up exactly with what Rudy's saying in public, which is that, you know, we just want this narrative to be about what happened in the election because we didn't start paying off the Russians until after we got elected.
Right.
It really makes sense, right? As to the conspiracy theory, so there's this guy named Stefan Halper who apparently has served as a source for both the FBI and CIA. He's a lifelong Republican. This is a guy who's done his own dirty tricks in the Republican Party. He does have real credentials in foreign policy, but he's a Republican. And what it appears is that in May, when the FBI had concerns about Carter Page serving as an advisor for Donald Trump, they said, we need to figure out what Page is up to. And they asked him to meet Page. And so this guy, Stefan Halper, and Page had an ongoing conversation from July of 2016 until September of 2017. Importantly, that conversation precedes Christopher Steele, any DNC dossier. I mean, that precedes all of the stuff, all of the last stuff the Republicans were inventing conspiracy theories about. And there's a really good reason for it, because we know the FBI was really concerned about Carter Page in March 2016, and then Carter Page became a Donald Trump advisor, which added to their concerns. Now, that guy...
Let me just clarify something. So Carter Page was not an advisor in March of 2016?
He was named in March of 2016. So same month happens. FBI interviews Carter Page for their ongoing counterintelligence concerns. They believe he continues to have happy conversations with Russian intelligence. And then that same month is when he is named as one of Donald Trump's five foreign policy advisors.
So that must have set off even more red flags at that point.
Yeah, right. I mean, and it makes sense. And that's one of the things the Republicans are outraged that the FBI thought to investigate. And here's the other thing, Sam, is it's sort of nutty. In Page's case, of course, the FBI had interviewed back and forth, but they didn't think that they were getting honest answers from him. So it would make sense to send somebody to try and, you know, cultivate his trust in the way that it sounds like Halper did. But so what happened later in September, the same dude, right, calls up George Papadopoulos and says, hey, I'm going to give you $3,000, do some research for me. And that's how he kind of got close to George Papadopoulos to ask him about why he didn't say this, right? He wasn't making his ties to the FBI clear, but asked him, you know, George, you know about the emails in Russia, right? And Papadopoulos said, this is really interesting. Papadopoulos, according to the Daily Caller reporter who's been Chuck Ross, who's been, you know, at the forefront of this story. According to Ross, Papadopoulos said, no, if I had anything to do with the emails in Russia, it would be treason. Which seems to me really damning, right?
So that's a very weird sort of like defensive thing to say. Like
maybe you thought that's what Halper wanted to say. But that means when Papadopoulos lied twice to the FBI in January and February of 2017, that's because he thought he was covering up treason. I mean, he was already on the record with an FBI source that if he did have a tie with the emails in Russia, it would be treason.
So that's his state of mind. And we should say that when Halper calls Papadopoulos in September, that's months after the FBI has heard from the Australian diplomat, right? That he had a drink with Papadopoulos, and Papadopoulos was talking about the emails. Is that right?
Right. So Papadopoulos learns about it in late April, again, before the DNC even knew about it. Papadopoulos learns about it in late April. He gets drunk on May 10th and tells the Australian ambassador about it. The Australians kind of sit on it for a while because they don't make much of it until in July, it looks like Papadopoulos has predicted what happened in July, right? So, but interestingly, and this is something the Republicans, the conspiracy theorists, want to hide, the Australian ambassador was told by Papadopoulos that the Russians intended to release those emails to help Donald Trump. So that's the point, is Papadopoulos knew in May and April stuff that happened in July, which is why in July the FBI opened up this investigation and why in September one of their sources. And here's the other thing that just, you know, it makes me crazy. I mean, we run in some kind of oppositional environments where from time to time you say, hey, that guy seems like he's not on the up and up, right? I have run into people that I have believed are informants before. When the FBI, I mean, the FBI is allowed to use informants at a very, very low level, right? And one reason they are is because that dude is not law enforcement. So when George Papadopoulos lied to Stephen Halper in September 2016, he couldn't be charged for that.
Right.
He couldn't be charged for lying about what he knew about the emails until he continued to lie about the FBI in January and February 2017. So you know, the Republicans are all up in arms about the fact that the FBI used this guy who, again, lifelong Republican. It's not like we sent Chelsea Clinton in to quiz this guy. But it is actually a more gentle way. It is more deceitful, although, you know, FBI sends undercover employees as well. It's more deceitful, sure. But it is also less risky for Papadopoulos for that approach than the other way. And there's also a lot of other good reasons about it, such as that there are, you know, Russian spies involved, and you try not to let the Russian spies know what you know.
Right. Okay, so we have that ongoing, and that is the whole, basically, the Spygate story. I don't know if it's contemporaneous or sort of running in parallel to this, or where does it intersect, is this whole story that came out, I guess, maybe it was the beginning of the week. I have, for the life of me, I can't even remember now. It was
time has no meaning anymore.
No, it doesn't. And I mean, that's the thing that amazes me about what must be going on in these prosecutors' offices, where they just like, we're going to need another wall to put our little cue card, you know, our little index cards up there. But the relationship between this guy Nader and Broidy and the clown prince, apparently, as he's called, Jared Kushner, and their dealings with the Saudis and UAE, it seems like, I mean, I guess it makes sense, right? Like, you know, we're open for business. We don't discriminate who our clients are. We're going to take money from everybody. You know, there's no reason. But where is the crossover there? Or is it just like, it just happens to be another bit of corruption?
No, there is a crossover. And it's important to remember that there's a crossover. Although, I mean, this is the point I keep making about the Halper story. It's like the Trump administration, the Trump campaign was willing to entertain financial or somehow other beneficial offers from Russian spies, Israeli spies, Emirates spies, Saudi spies, Turkish spies, Qatari spies. I think I'm missing one. You know, 6-7 different countries of spies. The only one they're offended by is that somebody from the FBI would come in to investigate these 7 other countries worth of spies. That's what the Trump argument is, that he's okay entertaining, listening to offers from 7 countries, from the spies of 7 countries. But if America's law enforcement decides to get in on the act, to figure out what's going on, that's what is offensive to Donald Trump. So that's where we're at. So the connection, so basically Donald Trump was offered the same thing the Russians were offering, campaign help in the form of basically information operations run by an Israeli guy who's tied, again, to their spies. And we'll have to see whether Mueller can prove that he did that. George Nader is this guy who also is a spy. I mean, he's been an informant for the FBI and CIA going back years to work off child porn charges. Donald Trump is okay hanging out with George Nader, but not okay hanging out with Stephen Halper. And what's interesting about it, A, you're right. This proves that the Trump administration was interested in pay-to-play from everybody. It also, by the way, proves when Don Jr. was interviewed by the Senate Judiciary Committee, they just released those transcripts last week because time has no meaning. He's asked very specifically, did any other country offer to help you? Did you have other meetings with people from any other country to help win the election? And he says very clearly, he says no. Well, that's a lie. Now he, you know, so one thing we now know is that he lied to the Senate Judiciary Committee after having been warned that that's a crime.
Now, was he involved in those meetings with the Saudis?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yep. So he took a pitch from the Saudis and Emirates. And then in 2017, when he was interviewed by a Senate Judiciary Committee, he's asked, did any foreign governments offer, any other foreign governments offer or provide assistance to the Trump campaign? None that I'm aware of. He was personally in that meeting. Did any other foreign nationals offer or provide assistance to the Trump campaign? No. He was in that meeting. So that's a lie. If Chuck Grassley actually cared anything about oversight and justice, he would be referring Don Jr. right now for having lied to his committee. Right. He's not. But the other thing, you asked if there was a connection with the Russian thing, and yeah, there is, because in December, at the same time as Kushner is, you know, entertaining offers from sanctioned Russian banks to get bailed out of stuff, and Kushner's also talking to the Qataris and also talking to the Emirates, they set up a meeting in the Seychelles Island in January, and there's actually a series of meetings in the Seychelles Islands. And it's not just the Russians. It's the Russians and Saudis and Emirates. There's some Israelis there, I think. There's even some South Africans there. So it was sort of this party on this island in the middle of the Indian Ocean where Eric Prince and a bunch of other people would entertain financial deals from basically these oligarchs of every sort. And it is believed, I think we're seeing the beginnings of the outlines. George Nader's closest to the Emirates. We're beginning to see outlines of the Emirates paying off the Trumps on behalf of the Russians. So in other words, the Emirates give you a way to pay off the Trumps in a way that might not be traceable to Russia as easily, if that makes sense.
Interesting. And that's almost like analogous to Broidy paying Cohen to ostensibly pay off a playmate model, right, who ostensibly had an affair with Broidy, but it's starting to look like that woman had an affair with Trump.
Right. These are all payments in kind. I mean, we don't know whether, not just an affair either, that woman had an abortion.
Right.
Right. But there's the beginning of an appearance of all of these pass-throughs, and that's the importance of Michael Cohen, right? So if you want to pay off Trump, you pay Michael Cohen, and who knows how much of that goes back to Trump or what's going back and forth. And we're going to start having a fight next week about how much of that literally is something a lawyer does and how much of that a co-conspirator does. Because, you know, Michael Cohen is supposed to be Trump, or was supposed to be before he got raided by the FBI. Michael Cohen was supposed to be Donald Trump's personal lawyer. But there's something called the crime fraud exception. If you're going to a lawyer precisely so you can break the law, then you no longer have attorney-client privilege. And there's something called a special master, a woman who used to be a prosecutor, who will wade through all of these files and decide what's actually privileged and what is not entitled to attorney-client privilege.
Is that process ongoing? Like, who has control of those documents at this time? And who has seen them? Who has control of them? And what will be the flow of those documents?
That is going ongoing. There was supposed to be a meeting today that got delayed until next week just to allow the special master more time to look. She has a huge volume of what was seized. And she is working at an incredible pace. Like, she's been doing some updates to the judge and saying, you know, here's where I'm going to be at by May 24th. So that the first meeting on what gets counted as privilege and what doesn't will be next week. My understanding is those materials either exist exclusively in her hands or in both the prosecutor's and in her hands, but they're not in Michael Cohen's. I guess Michael Cohen has copies so he can decide whether it's privileged or not. But once the special master makes decisions, there may be fights over them, but anything there's not a fight over, then, and for example, I suspect there won't be a fight over the taxi medallion business. So once she says, you know, this taxi medallion business is just your business, that goes straight to the prosecutors, then the prosecutors are going to get it. And who knows whether they'll wait to receive everything or whether they'll start moving against Cohen right away.
Does the White House, if Michael Cohen has copies of everything, and is those copies provided by the special master, essentially? Like, here we have 100 boxes of documents. We're going to photocopy all of them. We're going to leave you 100 boxes. Does Michael Cohen then basically send those to the White House and the White House so that the White House lawyers can look at it and say, okay, this is what they've got. This is how we prepare for what's coming.
I think he gets to share anything that is possibly attorney-client privilege with Trump, or also with, the Trump organization too is getting involved. But they're legally different entities.
Wow. Okay. So, and is there anything from this sort of like, is your house like just like look like that Carrie Matheson set from Homeland? Like, do you have stuff like going like, you know, threads going everywhere right now, Marcy? I just don't. The sheer volume of this stuff just seems unbelievable. And the nakedness of what they were doing. I mean, did they just think that they can't? I mean, what? I'm asking for you to sort of divine intention and speculate on what was going through their minds. But I mean, this is just like a full on, we're just going to squeeze every dollar out of this, thing, the White House that we can. Is that what was going on here?
Well, I mean, remember, they didn't think they were going to win. So yeah, first they started by saying, yeah, we'll do anything to win, because they didn't think they were going to win. They were just, you know, making deals. I think part of the problem is this is how Donald Trump has lived his life.
Right.
Right. And I don't think that he or his spawn or his son-in-law or his, you know, nominal personal lawyer, I don't think they can distinguish where things should change with the presidency.
Right.
And very importantly, I don't think they distinguish where their personal deal-making ends and where the foreign policy interests of the United States begins. And I think I've laid out in the past the same kind of conspiracy structure that Mueller has used against the Internet Research Agency and against Manafort. He could use, I'm not a lawyer, I'm certainly not his appellate lawyers, but he could use to say, if you are claiming to be doing the foreign policy business of the United States and instead you're taking bribes, that's a conspiracy. That's a conspiracy against the United States, and we're going to go after you for it. So I think, given what he has done, I could see him doing the same for all of this pay-to-play on foreign policy stuff.
Is there anybody who hasn't been interviewed? I mean, do we know for sure who has been interviewed by, obviously I think we know probably in terms of the House and Senate intelligence committees, but do we know everybody that's been interviewed by Mueller?
I'm sure we don't even know everyone who's been interviewed by the Senate Intelligence Committee. I'm sure we don't know. Because for example, I know somebody who was interviewed and no one else knows about it. So I'm sure we don't know. On Mueller, I'm also sure we have even less idea of everyone who was interviewed. I mean, let me remind you, the Internet Research Agency, the trolls, remember there was a guy who got paid to make a cage so there could be a fake Hillary in a cage at a campaign event? Remember that guy?
Okay, yeah, vaguely. Wait, he, like an actual cage?
Yeah, it was all a stunt, campaign stunt. Okay. That guy was interviewed for 6 hours.
And
right?
And you
don't know who that guy is. I don't know who that guy is, but that guy was interviewed for 6 hours. So the extent of these interviews, I mean, to some degree, the FBI was conducting a massive investigation already, but I don't think we can conceptualize the pure scope of what is being investigated here. Yes, we know the famous people close to Donald Trump who have been interviewed to the extent, I mean, remember, Mueller's team can't legally tell us who they're interviewing. I mean, they can't tell us anybody they've dragged before the grand jury.
Right.
And they're not telling us the other people they're interviewing. They've gone to great lengths to hide that from the press. So we should assume there are a lot of people who've been interviewed who just don't want to go tell the press, hey, I've been interviewed. But I also think we just can't conceptualize the real scope of this investigation.
Do you think, like, Jared and Ivanka have been interviewed?
Jared has. We know that. And Jared has because he was interviewed right before Mike Flynn slipped. He was basically given an opportunity to say, yeah, Mike Flynn was doing what he was told to do. And for whatever reason, Jared Kushner's answers were not enough to give Mike Flynn comfort that he would be protected. And that's what that is, like, the precipitating event that led to Mike Flynn slipping on Jared's father-in-law. And I suspect it's possible Jared got brought back in a second time. But look, I think Jared is a target, so you don't want to bring him in too often.
Right, that's what I guess I'm getting at, is to find out, like, is there any way to read any of these tea leaves? Like, wow, it's weird that Ivanka hasn't been in, or are they just sort of saving, the ultimate targets for the end when they know everything there is to know, or they think they do?
Yeah, and like Roger Stone is a better example because we know, because he told, was it CNN this weekend, that all of his, 8 of his closest associates have been interviewed. And again, I know I can think of at least one non-public source that I know who has been interviewed about Stone in recent weeks. So there's been a ton of interviews about Roger Stone, and he's never going to be interviewed by Mueller because Mueller has him targeted. At least that is what all of the tea leaves say. And so, you know, either Mueller has enough to charge him or doesn't have enough to charge him. But if he has enough to charge him, he's not going to give Roger Stone. I mean, why would you with Roger Stone anyway? Because the guy can't string 3 sentences together. But, you know, he's not going to give Roger Stone an opportunity to claim that he was entrapped or anything like that. He's just going to move to charges. And I suspect that's what Mueller would like to do with Don Jr. and with Jared, to the extent, you know, he's interviewed him once, but and then he'll throw in Paul Manafort. He hasn't interviewed Cohen, same gig. I think that's where this is going. I can't promise you. I don't know what Robert Mueller has in his pocket, but that's sort of where he seems to be headed.
And it seems to me, and I just want to get your take on this, that we're not going to see any resolution of any of this in any sort of significant way before the November election, right? I mean, this is not going to be a James Comey letter part deux, part deux here. Right?
Well, that's a false analogy in any case. Name any of the people we just talked about who are on the ballot in the fall.
Right. I mean, I guess right. Okay, fair enough.
Right. I mean, literally the only person who I think might be in some kind of legal jeopardy that's on the ballot in the fall is Ron DeSantis. He's one of the members of Congress who has been running interference for Trump. He's also probably one of the Republicans who most easily be shown to have benefited from the hack and leak because of the way the Guccifer figure leaked files to Republicans in Florida, and they got a bunch of Oppo research in Florida. Huh. I don't think he has legal liability, but nevertheless, he's the only person I can think of on the ballot who's got both, like, real involvement in the scandal and also a significant role in November's election if he wins the primary. So, you know, so it is a false notion to say that the entire Republican Party can benefit from shutting down the legal system just because the leader of it is under active investigation. I also don't think it's going to take that long for stuff to start coming down. I mean, Trump's people are trying to stall right now with this interview negotiation. I think, you know, Mueller is probably happy to continue that dance so long as he's putting the, you know, getting the Cohen stuff in order. And we'll see what, we'll see whether Manafort, I mean, Manafort's case in D.C. is definitely going forward.
Wasn't that scheduled
waiting to hear
originally to start now? Or is it already underway? I had it somewhere in my calendar, like early May.
Yeah, they tried. It's October right now. So okay. Again, it, you know, right now the court system has said there will be an active investigation of Trump's campaign manager during the campaign season. But he's also scheduled to go on trial in July in Virginia. There's a bit of a delay there, so actually the case might get delayed there. But you know, we'll see what the judge in that case wants to do with Manafort's latest challenges. He's the guy who famously beat up Mueller's prosecutors, though I don't think that that's that big of a deal in any case. So in other words, you know, we're going to see whether Manafort continues to fight, or whether Manafort. The other person who flipped this week is Manafort's son-in-law
right. In
a case in Los Angeles. So even more evidence, even more weight against Manafort. And, you know, I sort of feel like Mueller is going to pressure him and try and get him to flip because it's a lot easier than going to trial. But he understands that the cases against Manafort are what are called paper cases. It's just accounting. Right. All you got to do is walk a jury through how money moved from one place to another in a way that's illegal. And those, as I understand it, not a lawyer, tend to be a lot easier to prosecute because you don't have to rely on the credibility of any witnesses. It's all on paper. And those charges, if he's found guilty, will put him in prison for the rest of his life. So the question is whether he really wants to go through with that process or whether he wants to flip and provide Mueller with information about precisely how he and understand even the leaked questions that Jay Sekulow wrote down about what Mueller is interested in. It's pretty clear that Manafort himself asked the Russians for help. So what Trump is interested in is talking to Manafort and learning from him personally whether his requests to the Russians for help on behalf of the Trump campaign, whether he shared those with Trump or not. And that's sort of where he's going with Manafort.
Marcy Wheeler, I can't thank you enough. I feel like I can at least wrap my head around this a little bit better now. Folks can head over to emptywheel.net to watch this sort of ongoing thing. What is there one more shoe that you're like, wait, do you have anticipation of what's next? Or you just basically sit back and, I mean, do you have a notion of where you think the next bit of action is going to be, or you just wait and then absorb?
I don't know what's going to be next, but there's the hack and leak. At some point, I have every reason to believe the Russian hackers have been indicted and were months ago, right? And Mueller is keeping that secret. The hack and leak part, I think, is kind of floating around along here, and I think that's why Mueller has focused so assiduously at Stone, because if he can lay in Stone's outreaches to the Guccifer figure and to WikiLeaks as legitimate outreaches, then that puts a Trump person colluding, if you will, with the people who did the hack and leak. And so that, I have no idea how much longer that's going to take Mueller to put together, but that one's a big one because that is the story that will shut, you know, maybe 20% of Republicans or past 50% of Republicans up. When they say there's no collusion, because and that is, again, I think why Mueller is focusing on Stone. I don't know if he has the evidence against Stone, but if he does, that is a really critical kind of, like, there's a three-legged triangle here, and that's or stool or what have you, that's a really critical one because that's what would tie the Russian assistance to people close to Trump.
Marcy Wheeler, emptywheel.net. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Always great to be on. Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Wow. Right? I mean, I next time she's on, too, we got to ask about Devin Nunes. I still can't figure out what that guy's doing. But so there you have it. I mean, this is just and my sense of that her assessment as to what is the mentality of these people. I honestly just think they don't. This is the way you do business.
I also think the bit about them not expecting to win, so they got definitely way ahead. It's the producer's thing, but it's
definitely
a huge part of it.
I mean, yes, and I feel like, you know, we've been saying that for a long time, but I think there was also some quotes of Flynn's where it's just like somebody had asked him, like, do you think this is going to be a problem for you, like working for Turkey? And he's like, only if we win. You know, whoops. Got to make sure you don't hit that jump shot. All right, folks, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program. Just a little bit of house cleaning. My daughter, Mila, will be a bat mitzvahed this weekend. So tomorrow, Michael will be here, and we will run an interview I did with David Graeber about BS jobs, bullshit jobs. And then Michael will hold down the fort for the fun half. He will be here on Friday with Ben Dixon and
Ben Dixon and Ben Mankiewicz.
And Ben Mankiewicz, the Bens, on Friday. And I will be back on Monday with a fully bat mitzvahed child.
Why should she have a bat mitzvah?
She will now be an adult. And
women don't become adults.
Somewhere.
Dragons.
That's right. Yes. And she's, I guess her plan is to take enough time to stop playing Fortnite to actually get bat mitzvahed. And then she will resume the Fortnite. I don't know if she's going to be able to bring it up onto the pulpit, but if anybody has a child between the age of 12 and 15, I think they know exactly what I'm talking about. Apparently, every single child in the country of that age does nothing but play Fortnite.
I might need to play that.
You know, dude, you could play Mila. That's, she's like begging me to get on, and apparently though, on the iPhone 6, it's too buggy. That's what I've been told.
You can play it on phones?
That's why it's so huge.
I thought it was like an Xbox
game. It is both. It's console, computer, and on phones. And so they play it on phones. And like, she's yelling at her friends via the phone. Like, where is that guy? What's going on? It's nuts. It's completely nuts. The only upside is that she's off the slime. And so we don't have glue on every piece of furniture in the apartment now. That's the only upside.
She's growing up.
Yeah, she's really, she really is. Just a reminder, folks, it's your support that makes the show possible. You can head over to jointhemajorityreport.com to become a member today. Just coffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off, always free shipping. Last night was Tuesday night. And as you know, around here on Tuesday nights, it's the Michael Brooks Show night, and you had a what was it, like Science Tuesday on your.
It was. It was very sciencey. Eric Turkheimer, he's a behavioral geneticist, and we talked about the IQ. His research shows that basically disparate outcomes are class based, and you can correct them in with inequality interventions.
But who would have thought? Very,
yeah, shocking. But he has an interesting message. I mean, his sort of...
So politically correct, that guy,
super
right?
Politically correct.
Are you suppressing free speech, Michael?
Yeah, that was... That's a precondition for every guest on TMBS, right, that they suppress free speech and oppose the free and open exchange of ideas. And if they don't solidly commit to that, I'll turn anyone down.
Right, there you go.
The more aggressive, psychopathic boys, they simply don't care.
There you go.
That's our tag.
That's our tag.
Right. Natasha Leonard on this week's The Antifada. You can find it at patreon.com/TheAntifada. Right?
Yes. In addition to the iTunes store, and we have an RSS that you can use for any podcast.
What is this
app.
RSS I keep hearing about?
No,
I'm
it's
joking.
Like a
yes, no. Yes.
Feed of, don't make me explain it.
No, of
I
course
don't know.
You feed. And it's always good. Listen, it's always good to subscribe to all these shows on iTunes, even if you don't listen that way, because it pushes it up and it basically invites other people to subscribe to the show. So number 646-257-3920. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it will be the fun half.
You right. are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. Just want to degrade the white...